You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is May 13th, 2021. Well, it's that time of year. Normally, this time of year came a month earlier, but the last 2 years, due to COVID, April 15th is no longer so significant. It's turned into May 17th this year, and that means there's IRS scams. You've got to watch out. It seems to me they've gone down a little bit. You don't have these guys calling from boiler rooms in Mumbai trying to get you to like threaten you with criminal action, but they're still out there. You need to be aware of it. If you've talked with one of these scammers or you've been a victim of one of their scams, we'd like to know your story. Why don't you send an email to my personal address, kl@carrielutz.com. Right now with us is cybersecurity expert Ian Marlowe. We're going to be talking with him about IRS scams and what's going on with this pipeline in the southeast portion of the United States that has been hacked and temporarily taken offline, causing disruptions to millions of you out there. Ian, it's great to have you on. And so what first, let's talk about this pipeline. You know much about it?
I have taken a look into it, yes.
So what exactly has happened? Is this a ransomware scam or is it just malware phishing? How did they do this?
Well, I mean, there's not very much in terms of reports that's showing exactly how they did this. But the anticipation that, you know, is that it's a ransomware scenario. So somebody likely received some form of, whether it be a email, a text message, an attachment, so that remote access to the network was provided. And then nefarious things happened after that. So, you know, obviously, I think we have seen the network affected for a number of days now, and it's being brought back up. And this is causing significant issues to about 45% of the users of the pipeline.
Yeah. So it's, some of it's been brought back up, but basically they've got to just replace these systems, don't they?
They need to bring them up from a restored state, I assume, prior to any infection, and bring them up in a very specific order. And that's why you're seeing them kind of coming up tranche by tranche.
So many companies, though, don't have that capability to go back and do these incremental restores from their backup archive, because their backup archive has been infected by the malware, by the ransomware.
In many cases, yes. In order to avoid this, you need to have a design in your network that essentially has a hardware separation between the part of the network that's infected, whereas most of us, many people just simply do not have that. Many companies as well, they just have the network backup literally connected to specifically the balance of their network. So in those cases, you can land up with a significant corruption or lockdown even of the backup. So long as there is certain protocols in place segregating one from the other, you're able to in fact do this.
Wow. So this is big problem here, and we've just seen one example. How prevalent do you think it is in the industry out there in the world that all these hacks can take place? Are some industries better prepared for this than others?
I would never say an industry is better prepared. I would say that a company or a network or an end user would be better prepared. So all of these issues that become raised are part of the decisions that you make on how your either IT infrastructure or network is designed. And people make business decisions many of the time on a cost basis to say, this is obviously a doomsday scenario, and it's the chances of it happening is very, very, very low. The reality is that the chances of it happening are still, if you look at the larger basis of the law of large numbers, still on the smaller basis, but we hear about it every day, and it's happened to every retailer, different arms of government, large public companies, private companies. The perpetrators of these situations, they're very smart. They understand that in some cases there are technical ways to achieve their goals, and in other cases there is human interaction that's needed to achieve their goal, and they prey on each of those different options to achieve their end goal.
Right. So a lot of them have insurance for this too. You can buy insurance. In this case, I'm sure this company had it, and they seem better prepared than most because they're able to segregate the network. But still, it's a monumental task to pretty much restore each segment and then make sure it doesn't get reinfected, right?
Correct. And I would make the assumption that as these various areas of the network are then being brought back up, they're being even significantly more diligent, obviously, than prior to ensure that nothing is affected while they're bringing things up. And going through tests. This is why in many cases, if you do have networks like this, there are companies, if they're doing it the right way, they are simulating these types of events to see what they need to do and in what order in order to bring things back online. There's these scenarios in which people maybe do not value the time that's spent to test the scenarios and bring these back up. And in these types of cases, it's proven that if you do understand what you need to do in these cases, you can bring it up. You're able to do it safely and do those restorals. But of course, there's a significant time and both financial and social impact that occurs because of it.
Hey, so here's the thing. So a company really should be doing drills for this. They should just pretend that some portion of their network's been infected and they got to restore it, but they could lose a substantial amount of data because they have to roll it back to the time before the malware got implanted, the ransomware, right? So if you have a large network, large infrastructure, you need to actually have drills for this so that you're prepared, so it doesn't take you a week when it actually does happen to get things back to somewhat normal.
All true statements. When you set up your network, in some cases, depending upon whether or not it's in one data center or if it's in two data centers or if you're using aspects of the cloud to back up your information, the question becomes how often and at what frequency? Is it 15 minutes? Is it daily? Is it nightly? Is it once per week? And you are determining in a business case what you as a business owner, you are determining that interval and what is an allowable loss of data.
Yeah. And in some cases, like if it's a bank, there's no allowable loss of data for certain systems. If it's your ATM system or the account management system, you can't afford to lose 5 minutes. It could be tens of millions of dollars and you have no idea how to track those transactions.
Correct. And, you'll see that, the banking industries is an example, and why you don't hear so much about the banking industry being affected is they have used multi-factor authentication for almost every aspect of their external networks for many years, even, well prior to anything recent. And there, a significant part of that technology was being driven by the requirements both of the banking industry and the trading industry. It's when you're talking independent public networks or independent private networks, whether it be retailers and credit card companies, independent, more corporate owned type of companies, that they may not be using those various security techniques because they're making an economic decision that in some cases is okay, in other cases is not. And you'll see that as an infection happens, how it affects the company, its clients, or their customers.
Yeah. Well, this is why you need to make sure, whether you're a small, medium, or large business, this is an area where your insurance coverage is essential. Because in a large corporation like this one, a pipeline company, it's Continental Pipeline, This could be tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars in losses. It's 100 million gallons a day that normally travel through that pipeline. They make a very small percentage on that, 2 to 3 cents a gallon. That's when you say the price of oil is one thing and why is gasoline so much higher? Pipeline expense, trucking expense, that's part of it. But the point is they've lost hundreds of millions of dollars. They're not getting it back. But I guarantee you, Lloyd's of London or AIG, who are the ones that write these big policies, is going to be writing a big check. I remember one time I had business interruption. I had a server back when we had servers, if you can remember that far back, and the thing just blew up. It like burned out spontaneously. Luckily, I had backup tapes, but I was out for 3 days until I could get a new system and get it up and running and functioning again. And the insurance company wrote me a nice size check for the computer that blew up and for my loss of business. So, hey, I think we beat that horse pretty dead. Just be on the lookout that the costs can far exceed any perceived savings in what you think you're going to save, because if the costs are intangible until you get hit and then you actually have to write the check. So, Ian, what about these IRS scams? What are we seeing this year? Is there any variety, or are they just doing the same thing over and over again and just trolling for suckers?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has an excellent shareholder base, with Ross Beatty owning 20%, insiders 5%, and resource capital funds 8%. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
For the most part, you're seeing the same things over and over again. What is different this year is the combination of Corona and the world is just simply being different, and your data filing taxes being a month later has created a elongated time period for these scams. You have situations of identity theft of people, where their taxes, if in fact people received phone calls and shared information like their social security number and other aspects of their information with a nefarious individual, and they file tax returns, say prior, as in like last month or prior to the 17th when they're due, now coming up, and redirecting the refunds of unsuspecting Americans, where they're essentially have filed their taxes early and those refunds are going to bad people. So because we have this elongated timeline, the scam around the IRS tax scams have been then elongated, and we're more open to some of those situations because things are simply a little different. I can't remember any time in my lifetime that there has been a 1 month change or grace period on the filing of your taxes. That means that if you think that that rule, which has changed and did extend, that other rules may have changed. And if someone calls you on the phone or sends you an email, or you get a text from an individual that is trying to perpetrate some bad things, they may be able to convince certain parts of the population that in fact other rules have changed. And that makes us susceptible to listening to those things. So, you know, the scams are the telephone calls, scams are by email, scams are by text message. And let's all remember that the IRS is not contacting you and asking you for your information over the telephone. If you go to pay your taxes, it's through a secure portal online, or it's via check. If you're getting a communication from a government authority, it also is coming to you through an official communication, a certified mail, something like that. So everyone needs to be vigilant and understand, don't share your personal information. And very importantly, if you go to file your taxes in this coming week and you see or get a message that your taxes have already been filed, it is not potentially just that it is a mistake. It is a potential identity theft situation where your return may have been filed by someone else, and they will look to redirect your tax return to another location and then deposit and take that from you.
Wow. So with all of this, what the heck do you do? How do you avoid all this? You have to be on the lookout, obviously. I get that. But, like me, I don't remember the last time I ever got a refund from the IRS. It's strictly a one-way street with me and the IRS. I send them checks. So is it harder for them to scam me than somebody else?
I believe the checks do make it actually harder since it's more of an old process. But the first thing that I would suggest is, especially for the IRS, that you can go online now and they will you put in your information to the IRS website and they will generate for you a PIN code that is not shared with anyone. And that PIN code will be used for online and to identify yourself to the IRS. And if you don't have anyone else doesn't have that PIN code, they're not able to do anything relative to filing taxes or anything like that on your behalf. So that is a great first step to making sure of that. Of course, don't lose that PIN because it will be very difficult for you to be able to reset that PIN or get a new one. Separate from that, it is just about being educated and being vigilant, not sharing information by phone, by text message that can lead to anyone having that critical private information about you so that taxes can either be filed on your behalf or, in fact, for loans or other things to be taken out on behalf of you. A great tool that we have out there now with the credit agencies, TransUnion, Equifax, and others, is you can actually pay a monthly fee to any one of those agencies, download the app on your phone, and lock your credit. And if you lock your credit, no one's going to be able to take out and use identity theft to take out any financial mechanisms that can hurt you, like credit cards and loans and mortgages and things like that. So as we see the scams continue, we have to be vigilant, just not answer those questions. If you are concerned about your identity being being stolen, you want to lock that credit and you want to contact the IRS if, in fact, you find out that you are unable to file your current return because a return has already been filed. Don't lay back about it and say, oh, that's great. I guess they already have my information. If you did not file it, it wasn't you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. And I've seen this a lot, even on my website. I have a thing that if somebody tries to sign on and can't get on three times, it sends me a notice that somebody's trying to breach it, and then I can block their IP address. You know, all these things. Myself, the way I handle my backups, my computer, I've got a hard disk backing up everything, you know, through Apple's backup program, and then I use cloud storage, all these things. And the cloud storage makes me a little nervous, but you know, there's a lot of people that don't even store anything on their hard drives anymore, and they go and they put everything in a Dropbox or a Google Drive or a Apple Drive, iCloud Drive, and they don't have anything that's not on the cloud.
I completely agree. It all depends. And there are many options there. There is cloud technologies. There's private encrypted cloud technologies. There's way for you to use online technologies that are encrypted to back up, servers that you might have in data centers. All of these things are very important options. What I would say is in every case that you have an opportunity to enable multi-factor authentication, also known as dual authentication, whether it's an app on your phone or a token that's provided by your bank, use it, enact it. It may seem like a slight inconvenience, but as you noted earlier, these slight inconveniences are far less inconvenient than compared to the consequences of not doing it.
Hey, and that concept of these tokens, you got hard tokens and you got soft tokens. You could download like the Google Authenticator. One thing I noticed, Coinbase, whenever you go there from a app, a computer, a tablet, anything that they don't know about, They actually have three-factor authentication. You get the text on your phone, and then you get an email that you have to type in the code from the email. So belt and suspenders, when you're dealing with the cloud and computers, can never be too much security. And like you said, always activate two-factor authentication. That's what the IRS has. When you go onto your IRS account, they do the two-factor authentication and maybe three-factor sometimes. I think three-factor is where it's all heading, though, now, isn't it?
Yes, and you'll start to see in the future, you know, a combination of biometrics and other things being also added. And, you know, it's about staying the best you can, that significant step ahead. And we have to pay attention to it. The days of the four-digit passcode that anyone standing online behind you in the supermarket is going to look is really far behind us, you know. But you still do have those people that, you know, they'll say, you know, my combination is 12345, and they'll use the same password everywhere. You know, and it will take an event, it will take an inconvenience of, you know, somewhat of an important proportion to, you know, to make those people believers, especially when it doesn't happen to them.
Yeah.
We have these breaches at the corporate level, and you have these breaches at the private and the personal level. And it changes, it certainly causes the change in behavior when you have experienced it.
Totally. Hey, and here's a free tip to you out there. If you're concerned about your password security, don't use password as your password. That's a big mistake. Even if you capitalize it or lowercase or put dashes, password is not a good password. So that's a free tip that we're passing on to you now. Ian, if people want to find out more about you, connect with you on the web, see what you're doing, where do you go?
You can go right to www.fitechguild.com, or you can email info@fitechguild.com.
All right. And there's a link to that in the show notes on Financial Survival Network. Like I say, if you got a question about security, about being hacked, what you should do if you are hacked, just send us an email to my personal address, kl@carrylutz.com. Don't forget, sign up for a free newsletter. Got one coming out very shortly about Bitcoin, and you're not going to want to miss it. And that's financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Just fill in the box. Hey, Ian. Been great having you on. Thank you so much for coming, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Have a great day. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.